Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the October 14 edition of Commodity Week. Has an early season market low been put into the corn market? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jerry Gaulke of the Gaulke Group. In studio with us today, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, Jackie Bakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of TGM in Windsor, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's start our discussion today with this question. Have the explanations for the limit move this week in corn gotten any better than they were on the day of the move, which, frankly, was unexplained? Paul Cooley.
Well, near as we can tell, our informed sources say that the Chinese reserve going to buy 2 million tons of soybeans, 700,000 to 800,000 tons of soybean oil, and 1.5 million tons of U.S. corn. The big million-dollar question is, we did have a USDA crop production report. Those numbers probably didn't hurt the idea that we'll see some stability and maybe the season's lows are in. But it's a question mark whether the government even got that right.
My gosh, you answered three of my questions. We're going to have to go somewhere else later on. But we'll come back to them, Jackie Vakes. The 40-cent move.
Well, I think on the 40-cent move, in addition to what Paul just talked about, there were a lot of memories of 2010. You know, we went down hard after the September 30th report, just like this year. And when we came in and there were rumors of the sales, guys who were short just said, you know, I'm not so sure I want to take a chance. And so they just decided to lift short positions, and that propelled everything through moving averages. We have a lot of black box trading nowadays that gets triggered by moves like that. So I think that had a lot to do with it.
And Matt Bennett.
Yeah, it's sure interesting. Coming in before report with the magnitude that Wednesday's report could have held, and did in some ways, to go on a 40-cent move. I thought it was pretty interesting. You know, later in the week we find that China went in and purchased a fair amount of corn and beans, and so there was some explanation for it. But, you know, I think a lot of people were scratching their head wondering what's going on. Maybe who knew information before the report was coming out? And, you know, there's a lot of people kind of wondering what the situation was. And I think it kind of tempered any big moves on Wednesday, but it was nonetheless a very interesting move.
By the way, 1.5 million metric tons is roughly 60 million bushels of corn. December corn futures high this week of $6.55, a low at $5.98.5. Settlement price up 40 cents at $6.40. December of next year, $6.25, up 33.5 cents. You mentioned a couple of things, Paul Cooley, that I want to come back to. Let's start with the USDA report. Did it come out just as you expected it to?
Well, you know, since we're talking about corn, the numbers were in Illinois were a little smaller than I anticipated. We did see
two
bushels for corn. As a general rule, I think they took a very conservative approach, and that's what we got. I think the other part of the equation on corn, the world stocks of feed grain were considerably higher on corn in the world and also wheat. And basically what this tells me and told everybody that trades is that we have an adequate supply of feed grains in the world.
Can I come back to with you, Jackie, to that 60 million bushel mark that was with China earlier in the week? U.S. exports in the WASDE numbers were down 50 million for corn, and I suppose that could be a swap, or as the case might be, it should be built into the numbers, the 60 million right there in that 1.6 billion bushel number that USDA released for the exports this week.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And it really does bring up a lot of questions when you see how strong exports were today and the China sell. I think a lot of it, perhaps what happened last week on the 40-cent move was that, you know, the people who buy from us looked at this market and said, you know, this is value. And we found a spot here where we need to make sure, just in case this report doesn't come in real negative. I mean, we built so much negativity into the pre-report before the 40-cent move that you halfway had to believe that this report could be negative coming out and have a positive reaction to it. So I think that I'm starting to question the 1.6 million. Or a billion, excuse me, on that export number. I think they're getting to the point where you notice they didn't move any of the other numbers. Everything else stayed the same. Ethanol stayed the same. Feed stayed the same. I think we're getting to a point here where push comes to shove. I don't know where else they're going to cut.
So they cut it out of the exports.
Easiest place to do it. You know, it's the area that wasn't performing very well for a while already. And, you know, how do you explain otherwise the fact that we have more hog numbers, the fact that we still have strong cattle feeding, the dairy sector is still feeding. We're not losing a lot of cows. And the exports are the most likely place to do it. And you know, they cut 80 million bushels of feed wheat out, too. So, you know, that was a question there in my mind as to why they did that.
Matt, I got a question for you. We raised 40 cents this week. Finished December corn at $6.40. Did $6 feel like a bearish number to you in corn?
Well, to me personally,
let me ask, $6. Yeah. Does $6 in corn feel like a bearish number?
Not to me, no. To me, whenever I look at it, I will ask farmers, how many times have you sold corn for $6? What's your yield? And if your yield is 160 bushel, 170, even 140 times $6, your gross per acre matches up pretty nicely with a lot of years that you raise 200 bushel corn. In fact, it blows some of those years away. So is that a bearish number? I don't think so. I think it's awfully tough to tell at this point where we're going to go and where we're headed, but I think that $6 plus corn is an excellent price of corn.
Well, the thing that really bothers me, though, we do have 8.5 million metric tons more of wheat and corn in the world, and it's hard to sell corn and wheat in the world market, and that's one reason why we have that really low export figure in corn. I think the mathematics are clear that there's no big carrot on the stick that we have to increase by acres for next year, too, and so there really isn't anything magic in here, in my opinion, to propel corn to sharply higher levels. But as a point being taken is, maybe if we do get corn below these $6 values, so to speak, we might encourage demand at some point in time. But we have tons of corn and wheat in the world, and we have to figure out how we're going to sell it in the third place.
Right. So let me make sure that I've got the one number correctly, and I'll put it in bushels. The extra number of bushels that the world is producing last month over this month projected is 250 million bushels, right?
Right. Right.
Okay. And right. You had a comment you wanted to follow
up.
Well,
I did. I really think it's interesting, though, that when you see that the big increase that we saw in the corn number basically was a reflection of our September report, and a 4 million metric ton increase out of China, which is 160 million of that 250 million. And they walked in here and they buy 900,000 metric tons of corn right after. You've got to wonder, I mean, you know, are we really awash, or is it a situation where their demand is so strong, you know, that even with the additional production, I mean, that's what it would say to me. Why would I come in here and buy corn otherwise? You know, and so I think this report was really confusing in some respects and very interesting in other respects. I would have expected China to sit back and say, I'll wait till corn gets down to $5 or $4.50.
I agree, and I think this is the second year in a row that our quarterly stocks report, followed up by our October crop report, have really made an interesting dynamic in the market. One thing I'll say is that, you know, whenever we've gotten down here under $6, Todd, it's been amazing to see ethanol plants, chicken feeders, people who chew through a lot of corn are paying up big time for corn right here in the glut of harvest, and they're pulling it away from areas right here in Illinois that I know of for sure that traditionally we don't market corn to. And so I think it's going to provide for some interesting fireworks a few months down the road.
And I think the other thing that's really interesting too, Matt, is the Commitment of Traders report. When you look at that supplemental Commitment of Traders, I didn't get the chance to look at today's, but 2 weeks ago, commercials, of course, lifted shorts because they were getting grain coming in that had been sold to them, but they also added almost 32,000 longs. Last week, they added 43,000 longs. I follow that every single week. You don't see that happening in harvest unless there's tremendous demand and there's anticipation that they're going to have to buy corn.
One other note, Paul, is that the number we have now next year that we'll be working with is the ending stocks is 866 million bushels for corn. It's under a billion bushels by a long shot. It's a short crop. Producers know that's a short crop. It's a small number, and we're starting there, unlike the previous year where we started at, what, 1.12 or 1.2 or something along those lines. We're much shorter of corn than we have been in the past. Producers, as you talked about before we started the show, they're reticent to make a sale at this point because they've been wrong several years in a row trying to sell at harvest time.
Well, and the Informa people came out at 10:30 and said we are going to plant two more million acres of corn than we did last year at 93.1, which is a bin buster. Beans, 2 million acres more than last year. And we're going to have 2.6 million acres of wheat. The whole bottom line is that we do have a lot of acreage coming on stream, and the whole world isn't sitting back and not producing grain as well. So we are going to have some competition out there, and maybe we'll have a little tightness around here. But we do, as the Secretary of Agriculture said today on CNBC, we have adequate supplies of feed grains in the world.
Okay, I'm going to ask the two farmers, what'd you guys do with your corn crop?
Well, I cash rent mine.
Oh, that's
so
right.
I have an answer on that one. But what we do here is that there is very good corn and bean yields, but we are seeing this enormous storage. The farmers are basically going to the storage facilities and storing it.
What we saw early in the harvest with $7 plus corn is everyone was selling across the scales. What we saw whenever corn got under $7 and accelerated lower towards $6, everyone was storing. Personally, I had some corn sold ahead of time, took advantage of a lot of $7 corn at the start of harvest, and I've sold some corn, you know, across the scales that I decided I wanted to re-own just because I felt like it was a good value and I wanted to participate if it went back up.
One other item to take up. Cash basis, tighter than anybody has ever seen at this point in the year. We have overs, and we're not even halfway through the harvest across the nation. In Illinois, sure, we're at 49%, about a lot better than that by now, but we're not halfway through this harvest yet.
No, we're not halfway through the harvest, and we're hearing record basis levels in a lot of states, including the western states, where some places actually are 60 over. It's totally unheard of. I think the big thing we have to look at, just like, you know, I don't disagree with the Secretary of Ag. I don't disagree with Paul and the fact that we have a lot of corn and probably have a lot of corn out there. The thing that I say is the availability is not there. Just like Paul alluded to, we have built a tremendous amount of storage. We have a short crop. We're not forced to sell all the old crop that we had even. Farmers are reluctant to take more income before the first of the year. I hear that every single day when I encourage people to make cash sales. And so, you know, you have to have a willingness between the person who wants to sell. And the same thing with your elevators. Your elevators aren't necessarily really encouraged to sell at this stage of the game either. And so, you know, it doesn't come down to how much we have. It's how available it is to individuals and whether or not you can get what you want and how much you're going to have to pay to do that.
Switch topics. Time to talk about soybeans. We've got enough time for each of you to pick something. You want to make sure that people know about soybeans. We'll start momentarily with you, Paul. Cooley soybeans this week had a top of 1275 and three quarters, a bottom at 1158 and a quarter. Settlement price at $12.70, up $1.11 and three quarters of a cent. And next year's at 1251, we're up 76.
We think probably the biggest mistake in the crop production report was in the soybean sector. We do think Illinois and Iowa yields are a lot better. I do think the Chinese do have a pretty good appetite for beans because of their livestock margins.
Yeah, and I would, you know, that's certainly, those are certainly valid things. I think when you look at the bean situation, we're hearing very regularly that we're getting better yields than what we thought we were going to have. There's no question about that. I do think that, you know, when you saw the market reaction to the lower carryout number on beans, it wasn't a surprise. And, you know, beans have been really dragging behind corn for this entire year. You know, the ratio's been off.
Well, I agree with both these guys. I was shocked that we went down a half bushel on the bean yield, and I think, in my opinion, we might reverse that here coming up in the next couple, 3 months.
And that's Matt Bennett with TGM, Jackie Bakes of Stuart Peterson, Paul Cooley with ADM. When we come back in just 2 minutes, we'll talk with Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The warm, dry weather that we had the first week of October carried well into the second week, allowing harvest activities to race along. A cold front finally brought some rain to the state by midweek. Temperatures this week were well above normal, both highs and lows. Temperatures ranged from 7 degrees above normal in the south to 12 degrees above normal in the north, mostly during the first half of the week. Temperatures cooled down to normal or below on Thursday and Friday. Dry weather the first 10 to 12 days of the month was a boon to harvest activities throughout the state. Rain began moving into western Illinois Tuesday night and then spread across the state Wednesday and Wednesday night. Precipitation for the week was well above normal across the state thanks to the frontal system that moved through. However, for the month, rainfall is well below normal. The weather will be unsettled the early part of next week as a frontal boundary stalls across the Midwest. Rain is likely Monday into Tuesday as a low pressure wave moves along that front through Illinois. Much cooler weather will follow the system on Wednesday. High pressure will drift across the southern Midwest, and by Friday the weather should be slowly warming, and dry weather is likely Thursday through next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This is the October 14 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. In studio, our panelists include Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, Paul Cooley of ADM, and Matt Bennett with TGM. On the phone line and on his combine today is Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group. Good afternoon to you, Jerry. Thanks for taking time out of your busy harvest schedule to join us.
Well, I'm not going to take too much time because I've been combining while I was listening to you discuss the markets.
Are you shucking corn or combining beans?
We're done with beans earlier this week, and then we started corn, and then we had the rain, and I thought, well, I'll try it today, and it's back to 21% moisture, and I thought, why not? You know, it's it's time to do it, and it's kind of fun. This is what we live for, is a crop like this up here in northern Illinois.
And I was going to ask whether you were in North Dakota or whether you were in Illinois, too, but now we know. Yep. We better have the combine report. What's your corn yielding at this time?
Well, I didn't think we could equal our record, but we are. We're running, we just hit 300 wet a couple of times, but, you know, this is a John Deere GPS system, so it's probably off, but obviously well over 200, and that's a good 20 bushels better than I thought we would have, and I can tell, you know, what I did do this year was I increased the fertilizer 10% and the population, and, of course, we had about as good a weather as you could find anywhere in Illinois, so this is good, and I I've been running the figures through my mind. I can multiply times six, even let alone seven. And, you know, I didn't think I'd live long enough to net as much in 1 year off the crop as I paid for the land 25 years ago, and it happened. So I think it's time to quit. I might as well quit while we're on top.
All right. Well, does that mean you're making sales across the scale then? And that's really the question we want to know about.
Actually sold, I think I sent you the comments earlier, but earlier in September, we had some indications, you know, of a top coming, and it was ironic when we had the key reversal down in beans and then corn didn't follow through. But if you looked at the Brazilian real, we had a weekly reversal down in the real the week before the crop report, and it broke a long-term trend line, purely technical stuff, but it looks to me like the market was, the traders were looking at that as well, that subsequent to that, we had a about a 19 to 20% drop in the real price, which made them more competitive, us less competitive, and the natural follow-through was in beans, of course, to the downside. And the week before the crop report this time, almost a month later, and I'm not a cycle guy, but I watch that stuff, we had a weekly reversal, or at least the key reversal up on a daily basis on the Brazilian real stopped going down, and the prices of the dollar, of course, peaked out about that time. So it's ironic how that happens, and I don't really watch that all the time, but we just happened upon it. So in September, we got to well over 100% hedged and sold, and then we lifted about half those hedges Thursday and Friday before the blow up on Monday. So sometimes it's better to be lucky than smart, but it worked out pretty good. So I'm delivering the cash contracted corn and not sure what I'll do with what's left. But I think if they want to hedge it back up to the $6.75 to $7 level, they'll take all the grain that I have. I won't hedge, store $7 corn. And I did sell all the soybeans in that $13 to $14 range.
Jerry, nice that you've taken some time to talk to us today, and I'm always interested in your comments. We've listened to your farmer hat. Now let's take your farmer hat and go down to LaSalle Street. Why, or just how high is this market going to go before it realizes that we do have a pretty good supply in the countryside? Is it weeks or is it days?
Well, I look, and I don't know, but I'll watch for some signs. You know, and we have. Technically, we have a good-looking daily charts, which, you know, they turn first, and then the weeklies have not turned, and we're still monthly short, which says we probably have topped this market and in a downward market perhaps for 18 months, or certainly not taken out those highs. And that's what I'm kind of looking at farming-wise, is that I think we found out we can't do much with $7 corn, but with the hogs exploding here, we can do a lot with $6 corn. So we're in that range, and if you go back to 2008, you know, we capitulated back then, and it took about a year of sideways trading range before we finally broke out of that 5.25 level. So I think if November's crop report, and I agree with whoever mentioned about they thought the yields would be higher, my soybean yields were a record by probably 20 bushels, and yet the government may not have had all the time to harvest all the plots. So I look for November to be a little higher. I was wrong last year. I thought the same thing, but and I sold my beans out of the field last year and watched them go a dollar higher. But it's pretty hard to store this stuff up in this range, especially when my feeder friends can't put much use to $7 corn. So I think the highs are in. And cycle-wise or timing-wise, I look at a 50% retracement. You know, I think it was Merle Oster that once said a long time ago that 40% of the time you get a 60% retracement, 50% of the time you get half that slide back. And it makes sense because those that sold at the bottom and those that sold at the top and bought at the bottom, equilibrium is about halfway there. So a lot of technical guys on the floor are going to look at that, and I'm going to watch pretty keenly once we get 40% of that market back in both corn and soybeans as for a place to pause here. And I think we have to watch these quarterly reports because that'll tell us in January 12th for sure, just again, a better idea of what we have and how much we did use. And I'm perplexed by the drop in wheat feed usage and they drop in corn. What did we feed with a record number of cattle on feed and hog market the way it was? So there's some answers to be left, and we're going to have to wait, I think, till January to get the total answer.
Jerry, when you look at the ethanol industry, you know, it just seems to continue to chug right along. We've had tremendous exports. And what kind of impact do you think it's really going to have if it's pretty well accepted that they're going to remove the credit? With exports on DDGs at close to a million U.S. tons.
Yeah, I think that's a big if as to again, the world seems to like them better than we do sometimes, and I'm sure it's going to have an effect. And if you look at those numbers, we may have built a lot of stocks in anticipation of losing that. So that's something that indeed has to be watched. I think the government is not their ethanol usage back at all. But if you look at today's numbers, you'd probably imply that we're something less than $5 billion, and they did whack the exports a lot. So if the price doesn't go any higher, and I think this is really good for farmers that we did break it, even though we have to take a dollar a bushel less perhaps, we didn't destroy the factory. The ethanol guy has got to feel better, and the hog and cattle guy got to feel better. And maybe if we can, you know, if you look at the exports, they've got them in at $4.7 billion. What happens if you take that to $5 billion? I mean, next year, and that could happen if we get a problem overseas, and suddenly you've got a repeat of last summer's problem where you're looking at 600 million carryover, and that's about pipelining.
So whenever we look at the September quarterly stocks report, similar to last year, it was a real head-scratcher, and a lot of people, like you were just alluding to a little bit ago, didn't really understand as far as our feed usage went. What do you think is going to happen whenever we roll around, to January? Do you think that we're going to go ahead and say, well, maybe we didn't quite get that right? And if so, what does that mean for guys that maybe are still, some of the guys that we've been talking about that are storing this crop and maybe haven't even sold anything for next year's crop?
Well, I think come January, you need to make a real self-examination, because I think to go into that report believing that it may be bullish, we may be a little naive about that, because I think this crop gets bigger as we go forward, because most people who were negative the yield are saying it's better than we thought. You know, we looked at a lot of stuff around Champagne that came in better than we thought, even by 20 bushels, and I'm seeing that all the way north into South Dakota and Minnesota. If we get a better crop out there, and that's the one thing I'm wondering that the stocks report didn't tell us, is that we've been underestimating, or the government's been underestimating the yield from the previous year. And when you look at 150 million bushels, that's not a lot. You know, I don't know much about standard deviations, but I know percentage-wise, 1% of a 13 billion bushel crop is 130 million. You can be off that much. If we had 2 billion bushel carryover, we wouldn't care. But at 800 million, you're talking it's either 550, 600, or it's a billion. And that makes that market move pretty volatile. So I don't want to risk a lot on my farm wondering whether it's going to be bullish or not come January. I think we have to take a look at the situation and what we might plant next year. And you folks are talking about acres going up and Informa's ideas. They're a little less bearish than I am. I think if you look at North Dakota, I have a new son-in-law up there as of last Sunday that has got 5,000 acres of hard red winter wheat planted, whereas last year he had 3, and a lot of his 60% prevent planting has been worked. It's ready to go. They had 80-degree weather. We could easily pull in 3 to 4 million acres, 3.5 million to 4 million acres probably of prevent planting unless we get another La Nina next spring. And that's going to go to, they do well in corn. That'll go to beans and probably some spring wheat if the price is still up there. And we have a lot of it in the south that gets flooded that I think could come back in. So we want to be careful that we don't underestimate just what kind of crop we can produce next year.
Jerry, thanks so much, and safe combining.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Jerry Gulke is with the Gulke Group, joined us here on this October 14 edition of Commodity Week. Our thanks to our in-studio guests, including Paul Cooley, Jackie Vakes, and Matt Bennett. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.